CBS Sports Radio.
All right, guys, welcome back to Hour 2. Sklar Brothers filling in for Jim Rome. Happy holidays if you are driving to go meet loved ones, if you're finishing up your work week before the holidays. If you're just high on Hanukkah Manischewitz, we're happy to have you here. Welcome to the show.
If you dig what we're doing, we have a podcast called View from the Cheap Seats. Subscribe to that. It's pretty much what we do here.
Our weekly take on the world of sports, a little comedy, and music mixed in. If you like the music we're playing here, that's what we do. By the way, this program, Jay, brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Matt Weiner is going to be calling in a short bit.
To recap what we talked about in hour one.
Yeah.
Isaiah Thomas, 2-game suspension.
The fans got banned for a year who confronted him, which I don't even know how you enforce that. But
just wanted a Frosty.
He wanted a Frosty.
That's all this dude wanted.
That sounds bizarrely sexual. I don't like that.
Just wanted a Frosty.
All he wanted was a Frosty. I looked it up. I was like, do I have to now look up what a Frosty is? That's just a dessert at Wendy's.
It's not a blizzard. It ain't a blizzard, bro.
It ain't a blizzard.
Just one Frosty.
Matt Weiner is with us right now.
This is a guy who probably has 3 to 6 Frosties a day.
No, he does not. Did you just want a Frosty, Matt Weiner? Come on, is a two-game ban? I thought IT handled that pretty well. What did you think?
You're talking about Isaiah Thomas.
Yes, sir.
I came in the middle of the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he handled it really well. The problem is the league instituted a rule a while back saying if you go into the stands, you're going to get suspended.
Yeah, so he knew what he was getting into.
As calmly as he went in there, he crossed what they consider a bright line.
Right.
And so it's pretty much automatic. By the way, it's always fascinating when you join a radio show in progress,
yeah.
Because when I'm, sort of plugged into your conversation, the first words I hear are bizarrely sexual.
Right, I know. Well, that's always the way we like to bring you into the conversation, Matt Weiner. The bizarrely sexual Matt Weiner. No, we were just talking about someone just saying, "I just wanted a Frosty,"
or like a Frosty.
You know what I'm saying? That just felt. I had to look it up before I realized. No, he just wanted a dessert from Wendy's.
A Frosty is a beverage, right?
Right. Yeah. Well,
I think it's
a
like
euphemism.
Is there
some
other meaning I don't know about?
No, I don't. I looked it up and there isn't. So thankfully we cleared
okay.
that up. Stop
okay.
with that music. But let's talk about the NBA this year, because I don't know about you, and you've been covering it for a long time, but I feel like this year from the get-go, from literally the first game when the Lakers played the Clippers.
Every game feels like a playoff game. Are we wrong to say that?
It's a great season.
No, it's a fantastic season. And it goes back to the summertime mm-hmm. when, after all the changes, I realized that for the first time in probably, 10 years, I didn't know with like 95% certainty who would win at least one of the two conferences.
Right.
And that's great. Like, that's all you really want is some, a reason to watch during the regular season and a reason to figure things out during the regular season. And it has made for some really interesting matchups and some really interesting intensity as teams try to prove things to themselves and to each other along the way. It's been good stuff.
It has. I feel like, for me, as I'm watching a lot of these games, I feel like everybody's got two guys. That is my little attitude towards it. Like,
yeah.
The Lakers have LeBron and Anthony Davis. The Clippers have Kawhi and Paul George. And obviously they've got supportive guys around that. But the Rockets.
You can't play with just two.
You can't play with just two.
The rules dictate you have to have more.
You have to have more. That's a great point.
But two guys that take games over. And when they do that, I mean, we're talking about a Toronto Raptors game last night that they were down 30 points in the fourth quarter and they come back and they win. Like, that's the kind of game that felt like a playoff.
The Raptors to me are the Raptors and the Heat are the pleasant surprises of the East this year. I did not see them sitting 3-4. Did you?
No, they're not only pleasant surprises, they're also exceptions to your two-guy rule because
kind of.
They're both sort of ensemble casts. Miami has a legit star in Jimmy Butler,
of
and
course.
Bam Adebayo may turn out to be an all-star this season, but, before now, you wouldn't have guessed that.
Nope.
But they play good defense. They play together. Butler, as prickly as he can be, is a really good teammate when he's in the right mind frame. And he likes this team. He personally picked that organization because he likes the work ethic there. Miami is famous for being tough on players in terms of, conditioning tests and
right.
Having to reach body fat quotas and, yeah. and that sort of thing. And he's embraced that. He's all about that. You know, the complaints you've heard from Butler in the past about teammates have been, these guys don't work hard enough. He wanted that.
That's right.
I think that's one of the reasons he's not in Philadelphia, because I think you can fairly look at Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and say, yeah, I don't know if these guys work hard enough. I don't know if they love it. I don't know if they really want it as talented as they are. And I think that's part of the reason Butler's not there anymore, and he's in Miami.
And
Toronto,
yeah.
you know, Kawhi Leonard, who, you know, some people think might be the best player on the planet now, he's certainly among the top three. He walks out the door and you think, well, that was a great story for Toronto and for Canada. They win a championship, but
right.
okay, they're going to be a sixth seed or a seventh seed. Some of our guys on NBA TV thought they wouldn't even make the playoffs this year.
Mm-hmm.
They've been unbelievable.
They've been incredible. And like you were saying, Heat sitting three, Sixers sitting five now in the East
yeah.
as we speak right now. I think there are a lot of parallels. So in the Western Conference, I don't know if anybody thought the Mavericks would be as good as they are this year. I knew you think they're good. They got
no.
a superstar, but the emergence of Luka, I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? They have emerged in a way, and I don't think we've seen the best of Porzingis yet.
No, not at all. Well, I mean, I think most of us thought that Dallas could contend for a playoff spot. Not that they could conceivably have home court in the playoffs, which is the way it looks like right now. And granted, we're only 25, 27 games into the season for most of these teams. But Luka has been unleashed in a way that we couldn't have imagined, because they're all in on Luka. His usage rate has shot up.
Yep.
And they run everything through him. And I think with Porzingis, he was out a year, right? So he's still figuring it out. And they're still figuring out what to do with him. They don't really have, if you watch them play, they don't really have a go-to spot for him.
Right.
And I'm still not exactly sure what his favorite spots on the floor are. He's a really talented guy. Obviously, he's got incredible size and mobility for that size. But I think there's a lot of upside with him. And without Luka, who's been out the last four games with his ankle injury, Dallas has shown that they're still an incredibly efficient offensive team. They've been one or two in offensive efficiency most of the season, and that's basically continued without him on the floor. So they are more than just Luka, despite the fact if you look up and down the roster, you probably wouldn't say this is one of the most talented teams in the league.
But they have someone that they can go – if you got that go-to guy who can have the ball in his hands at the end of the game, I feel like it's like having a great – it's like having a great number one pitcher. You know, you have like, again,
absolutely.
Like Jay was saying, it can get you through the playoffs in certain series. It can get you there. I think the Jazz, Utah and Indiana remind me of each other in both conferences. Both made some great moves offseason. And yes, they're kind of in the, you know, the Jazz are six and Indiana, I believe it. Yeah. So, I mean, they're both, but I think they're both poised to make moves with great roster upgrades this offseason.
Yeah, the thing is, they're in about the same spot, and they are very similar because they're both defensive-minded teams. Mm-hmm. They don't play especially fast. But I think those of us who cover the NBA look at them very differently right now, because mm-hmm. Indiana is maybe overachieving a little bit as they still wait on Victor Oladipo to come back.
Right.
The potential for Oladipo and Malcolm Brogdon to play together is pretty interesting if you
sure.
think about what the two of them can do. Brogdon can play either guard spot. He can guard either guard position.
Yep.
He's a shooter. He doesn't have to have the ball in his hands. Oladipo's a guy who can finish games for them in terms of a playmaker and scorer. So they figure to get better. Utah is a little bit of a disappointment. I mean, a lot of folks, myself included, thought they would probably finish the regular season at least top three in the West
mm-hmm.
With the additions that they made in the offseason. Mike Conley's been hurt, and when he's been on the floor, he just hasn't looked at all like himself. He's not been very good for them, and maybe that's just the unfamiliarity of having played his whole career in Memphis. And all of a sudden
right.
having a new offense. Maybe the injuries have taken their toll. It's, you know, it's hard to say, but between he and Bojan Bogdanović, who I would say has pretty much been what they thought he would be. He's
right.
a scorer. That's what he does.
Right.
But the offense has not been as good as we suspected it would be, and that's what they were trying to address. And their defense hasn't been quite as good as it's been the last few years.
Well,
again, plenty of time to go, but
exactly.
they're not quite where I thought they'd be.
They're not quite where they are, but they're sitting in a spot where they could move up.
But there's a lot of talent ahead of them. I watched the Rockets-Clippers game the other night, and I'm like, these guys are banging like it's the playoffs, and you
yep.
look at the Rockets and you say to yourself,
well, they hate each other, which helps.
They hate each other, so there's that.
But the fact that, like, it was Westbrook's game through the first three quarters, and then you almost kind of forgot about Harden, but then he just took over, and you're like, wait, I don't know how any team can combat this, because Harden is can do it all by himself, and then, oh, yeah, there's Westbrook there, and you still have the cast of supporters around him.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, you know, there are plenty of ways you can look at it and nitpick the arrangement, because Westbrook without the ball in his hands is kind of a clunky fit for James Harden, and vice versa. You know, Westbrook is not a good shooter, for instance. And if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he's got to move without it to be effective. And Harden's going to need the ball in his hands a ton. Where they're really effective as a tandem is kind of when they're not on the floor together. So they can stagger their minutes, and Mike D'Antoni's been doing that. You get sort of a change-up. Houston normally does not play fast, despite D'Antoni's reputation, with Harden in the game. They play really slow, in fact. With Westbrook, you know, he can grab a rebound and just take off, and 2 seconds later he's at the rim. And that's something they have really missed, because they were not a particularly athletic team. The question for them is going to be, you know, can they summon up the kind of defense we saw from them a couple of years ago? Because that's what's going to determine how far they go in the playoffs.
That's right. Are the Celtics the most under the radar number two seed that I think they're playing great. And I think that, Brad Stevens has the team he wants. He has his players there now. I think, you know, he without Kyrie there, I think Kemba Walker's a better fit for that team. But I kind of like it feels like the pressure's off them a little bit as they sit at the number two seed in the East.
Absolutely. Totally under the radar and totally loving that. You know, you knew that when Kyrie walked and they brought in Kemba Walker, Kyrie is a better player at his best than Kemba Walker, but not by a ton. And I think Kemba Walker clearly is a better locker room presence. You know, he was beloved in Charlotte. They never got anywhere with him. And so you could argue that there's a ceiling if he's your best player. But in Boston, he joins guys who have upside still. We saw what Jason Tatum did last night. He had 39.
God. Yeah.
Jaylen Brown's having the best season of his career. Gordon Hayward is going to be back again soon, maybe even on Christmas. And it just seems to fit better. They don't have the log jam of wings that they've had the last few years, and for whatever reason, it works. And Kyrie, you know, has said he wasn't the best teammate last year. He had some personal stuff going on. You know, he is moody. That story's been out there.
Right.
And I do think it affects the day-to-day with a team when your star player is not as engaged as he wants to be. And maybe that's because he didn't choose Boston in the first place.
That's right.
Maybe that's because of the stuff he was going through. But everyone seems happy in Boston now. And despite everything they lost, because remember, it wasn't just Kyrie. It was Al Horford leaving for Philadelphia. Aaron Baines was a big part of that team. He's gone as well.
Yep.
And somehow they're better. And it's funny how that just sort of works sometimes in the NBA.
Well, you understand what a system that Brad Stevens has put in place there. I mean, they look like they're having fun. I mean, I think perhaps maybe the greatest thing that Kemba Walker brings is a belief that the world is round. That's another story in another scenario.
Whole different philosophy.
I've never asked him about that specifically.
I would ask him if he thinks
where he stands on that issue.
He's not a flat earther. But there's one video I want to point to, and I'm sure you saw it. It was taken by someone, I want to say, in the almost like the front row, but when Brad Stevens brings in Taco Fall into the game, and he waits until the crowd starts going on, and he on the sidelines is kind of whooping up the crowd himself, and then he tells that moment was fun. That's something that, you know, you see some of the players having fun, but to see the coach enjoy,
it's like a Scalabrine moment.
It felt like these guys are enjoying what they're doing, and that has to have something to do with the success of a team.
Absolutely. Well, they're winning also. I mean, that always makes it more fun. But it's rare you see the coach give into that, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, they have their ideas about who's going to play and who can play. And they obviously know things we don't in terms of injuries and development and that sort of stuff. But he clearly gave in to the crowd and to his daughter, who wanted Taco Fall to come into the game.
I mean,
and by the way,
whose daughter doesn't?
Back in the day, you know, at 5'11", not 7'6", but I was the Taco Fall of Hazelwood West High School.
In St. Louis, Missouri. That's right. You were there. Yeah. Everyone was calling for, bring in Weiner. Bring him in.
And then, Hazelwood West.
Right.
Everyone's daughter was saying, bring in Weiner. Well, you guys can see Matt as we see him on NBA TV's signature studio show, Game Time. You are fantastic on that show. Turner Sports carrying three NBA doubleheaders this week, including TNT's Thursday coverage at 8 p.m. Eastern. It's one of my favorite things to do over the Christmas break is watch a little NBA, and nobody covers it better than you. Matt, thanks for joining us on the show. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Happy holidays to you guys.
You too. Happy Hanukkah. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, special guest. There's such good stuff on this show. Special guest coming up after this break. And then later on the show, Robert Lucetich, we're going to talk about Patrick Reed. Is he the new villain of the...
And is that good for golf?
I think it might be good. We're the Sklar Brothers. We're filling in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Yeah, that's how we do. Little beach bunny, prom queen. We are the Sklar Brothers filling in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio. So happy to be here. Thank you to Matt Weiner. Just great NBA analysis. And, of course, he's got it all because he's on NBA TV, and he's fantastic.
Oh, we got some networks. Tweets, Rand.
Let's read
it. Stephen H. Town at Stucknut.
Yep.
Our buddy. Whoa, I won't allow Cardinals fans to bag on the Astros for cheating. Copy that, bro.
That's actually a great point. And I saw that coming. I saw that coming because I heard someone bang a trash can just down the hall. So I knew that curveball was coming our way.
RHB Troglotti at Sklar Brothers Darts. You're talking darts for what? For who?
That's a good point.
Wow, bro. Why are you hating on darts, man?
Why are you hating on darts?
You're hating on people who have a projectile they can throw right at you with pinpoint accuracy.
By the way, that tweet hit the bullseye. Dear Sklars, I can't stand Chewy. I like mine crispy. Regards, Charlie Weiss, frying up 20 pounds of bacon for a snack. Jeff and Lincoln. I want to just go back and watch any Notre Dame game. Charlie Weiss, the amount of distance between his belt and the crotch line is just... And the amount of body in there.
It's magic.
A lot of stomach below the belt is what I'm saying.
Damn magic.
A lot of it below the belt. Well, I love talking basketball with certain experts. Matt Weiner, again, he's in it all the time. But then there are some people that surprise you.
With their knowledge.
With their knowledge of the NBA. And I was completely surprised when we found out that this man was such a huge NBA fan. And then he's come on our podcast several times to talk NBA. He is, of course, Academy Award-winning character actor, although he's been fantastic in whatever movie he's done. German or Austrian? I'm not sure. Actor Christoph Waltz has joined us on the phone right now. Christoph, how you doing, sir?
Sklars, it's so wonderful to be on here with you, and it's such an amazing time of year celebrating the Yule, as well as you know, NBA slate on Christmas Day.
Oh, you're a big fan of the NBA slate on Christmas Day, right? You love this.
It is as American as apple pie. Yep. When I played Hans Landa in Inglourious Basterds in my trailer, it was wall-to-wall posters of classic NBA guards from the 1980s.
Who is on your wall?
What guards are on the wall of your trailer?
I had a Glenn Rivers poster. Before he was Doc Rivers, he was Glenn Rivers with two M's. Yep. I also had a Sidney Moncrief.
Sure.
I love those Bucks and the three-tone jersey from the old era.
Terry
the
Cummings.
Mecca. Mm-hmm. The Mecca was an amazing place to see basketball.
Sure.
And beyond that, I had a Mark Price.
Of course,
poster.
You had a Mark Price. Of course,
you remember those Sports Illustrated posters?
Sure,
those are the ones that I cherish.
You cherish those and hung them up in your chest. Would people walk in and say, "Whose trailer is this? This can't be."
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
Tarantino, Quentin. I call him Quentin. That's his first name.
Yes,
he would come into the trailer and say, "What am I looking at right now?"
He doesn't understand.
Is that a Dominique Wilkins
Yeah.
poster? And I would say, "No, that's." No, that's the low-hanging fruit. I have a Gerald Wilson.
Oh, of course. You're with the – that just shows you. That separates the –
That draws the
from
line.
It draws the line. And, of course, I wouldn't expect Tarantino to know – I mean, I would understand if he'd know his difference between Kurosawa films, but, like, the difference between a Gerald and a Dominique Wilkins for that man, he cannot even
– He understands the nuance absolutely between old films. He knows the difference between Fellini and Truffaut, and
sure.
I know the difference between a Dolph Chase and a Danny Chase.
That's a very thin line to be able to describe. Well, I know your favorite player has landed on a team that is doing surprisingly well this
year.
The
Dallas Mavericks have Porzingis the Unicorn, and how do you feel? Has it turned you into a Mavericks fan?
Well, as you know, I'm a New York Knickerbockers fan, and this is a difficult time for
me.
Very
difficult.
It's not exactly where I'd like to be.
Oh, we're losing you. You might be going through some sort of a
German tunnel.
He might be going under a German – in a German – he might be in a bunker of sorts.
You hear me?
Now we got you.
Yes.
We got you back, Mr. Waltz.
I will – saying that, you know, it's not exactly perfect. It's not really perfect. The Knicks are going through a difficult time right now. It's the equivalent of trying to open a major motion picture, let's say, in the middle of September.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not perfect.
It's not
going to
happen.
So they're not going to be playing the Mavericks.
Yeah.
Because of the Porzingis lineage, I am very much rooting for the Mavericks.
Are you a Luka Doncic fan? Do you like his about his game, Christoph Waltz?
What impresses you?
It's the overall vision of the court that I can't get enough of, the way this guy sees the court, and then beyond that, just the love of the game.
Yeah.
They talk about Larry Bird having his contract. The love of the game clause.
Yeah.
I'm going to rename it the Doncic clause.
Okay, so
no one is having more fun in the history of the game than Luka Doncic. He looks like his mom dropped him off at the gym one day, and he woke up like the kid from the movie Tom Hanks in Big.
Yeah,
he woke up and oh my,
he's in a big man's body.
Machine,
yeah,
and then boom. He's now an all-star.
He's an amazing player.
And that's a great story, especially for that team. He's been out for the last couple games, and they're still efficient. They're still playing well, according to Matt Weiner, who I'm sure you watch a lot of Matt Weiner on NBA TV.
I love Matt Weiner.
Sure.
I also have a Matt Weiner poster.
You
up
do?
I didn't know they made Matt Weiner.
Do they make Matt
poster?
Weiner
yeah,
fat
I have a Matt Weiner. I have a 3D Dennis Scott poster. down the line. But listen, here's the thing. The Mavericks are having a renaissance, and people thought that they had tuned out Rick Carlisle and his militaristic approach to the game.
I know.
But as an Austro-German man, let me tell you something. Uh-huh. After a while, you need to listen to this kind of order.
Yeah.
And here's what's happening.
That's scaring me a little bit.
Jalen Brunson is having his basketball bar mitzvah this
year. He is
coming
becoming
of age. Well,
a man.
We remembered when he dominated the college game with Villanova, and then here he is.
He kind of had an old man's game, a below the rim, I'm going to beat you in a rec league sort of a way. And he's the type of guy that in a rec league comes in wearing three knee braces, if that's possible. And everyone's
He wears three knee braces, but he's breaking ankles everywhere.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself, Crystal. Your basketball knowledge is
shocking.
Is encyclopedic. Well, can you at least give us, as we are in this sort of nascent season here, can you give us a prediction of who you think will be there standing at the end? And what can we see in the NBA Finals? Who do you think is going to be there?
I think I have a couple sleeper teams that nobody's talking about.
The
equivalent this year's Toronto Raptors. Mm-hmm. Who are they?
They could be the Toronto Raptors. They could be the Toronto Raptors.
This year's Toronto Raptors exactly is the Toronto Raptors.
There you go.
That's saying a lot.
It's saying a lot, and no one is talking about some of the... Listen, I think this Melo Anthony pickup for the Trailblazers is not going to put them in the finals, but I think you could see them in the final four of the West.
Wow.
McCollum and Lillard, they're just coming back and finding their rhythm. And
rounding
into
form.
They lost the guy, what's his name, Leonard, went to Miami.
Yeah, wow, this is very specific.
I think we're learning about just what he meant to the locker room.
Yeah, so a lot of it is locker room politics.
Everyone is talking about the Lakers and the Clippers, sure. But I think Kawhi is hurt, and I think LeBron is too focused on Bronny's games right now.
Wow, that's an interesting take.
And so I think what you could end up seeing here is some of these teams, the Denver Nuggets.
Sure.
Nobody's talking. This guy, Jokic, talk about a guy who looks like he plays at the rec league.
Yeah.
This man, he has Boris Diaw arms.
He does have Boris Diaw. So arms of a man 10 years older than him, has lost a significant amount of muscle.
I filmed Inglourious Bastards, and he has the arms of a overgrown Sam Levine.
Okay, got it. Great point. Great points all the way around. Played. Well, I can't. So you think someone could sleep in it and slide in? Last question, because I know you follow the career of Jimmy Butler very closely and what he can do. Is this his renaissance with the Miami Heat? Is this a chance for him to prove to everybody how talented he is and how he is actually good for a locker room?
Jimmy Buckets is proving to the basketball world that Miami isn't just a party city, it's also a basketball city.
It's a mecca,
and
sure.
Bringing them that intangible. Look, when I saw the Knicks sign 7 non-shooting power forwards in the offseason,
wow.
I thought to myself, what teams are doing the right thing?
Right.
And Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley have done something very interesting here. And they got this kid, Duncan Robinson.
I was Michigan guy.
Mitchell Robinson. Instead, it's Duncan Robinson.
Sure.
Who
great shooter.
Known? But he's a John Beilein product.
Yes.
And he's going to bring you the business.
That's what he is going to bring. Christoph Waltz, your basketball knowledge is incredible. I wish you a wonderful Christmas, and I know you're going to be just hoops under the tree all day long watching the NBA with your family, but thank you for joining us on this show. We really appreciate it.
I always enjoy talking to you guys about hoops or anything. Please get cozy on the couch and bring some DiGiorno over, slice it up, and sit back, because it's going to be 12 hours of truly not very consequential basketball.
It is, indeed. Thanks, okay.
There, Alvita Zane, thank you so much, Christoph Waltz.
Look
wow. Did you? I mean,
I didn't think he knew that much about
his knowledge.
I mean, I've known you can go down the line. He has knowledge of every team.
He really does.
Is that an effort of him to try and assimilate into American
culture? Well, remember
culture?
He did those commercials where he
for
was
American
like
Express.
A Samsung. I thought it was a Samsung thing where on the 4th of July he's dressed in all red, white, and blue. And you figured he was adopting.
For the commercial, but I guess it's a real life.
I think it's a combination of the NBA becoming more global. You have a lot more European players playing here. But I just, it's amazing to me that that's where he is now. And that's just brilliant stuff.
I love it.
Should we take a break?
Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk golf.
We're going to talk golf. We got a hot golf take. Or actually, we'll talk to Robert Lucetich and we'll talk about golf. But right now, let's send it for a little sports update, shall we? With a little Jay Brown.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest hosts Randy and Jason Sklar on CBS Sports Radio.
These aren't the droids you're looking for. We're the Sklar Brothers filling in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio. So happy to be here. Great NBA talk with Matt Weider. Great unexpected NBA talk with Christoph Waltz. And then we're going to switch gears, because I actually think this is a time of year where you're not thinking about golf at all.
Right.
And yet, this past week, we got deep into golf with the President's Cup. I don't know how excited you were about that, but it just was fascinating to me.
I was into it because I feel like of the nation's competitions, of the World Against the United States competition, the President's Cup is the one we get. Ryder's Cup is the one that we just keep letting slip away as America.
So it is, it just, and this one was fantastic.
They had to snatch it from the jaws of defeat this time around, and it was Tiger Woods.
And it was, Tiger Woods was amazing. It was tense. So to break it all down with us, we invite in on the show, if he's on the line right now, and we've got him, Robert Lucetich.
Golf writer.
Fantastic golf writer, and he knows his stuff. We invite him onto the show right now. Robert, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, fellas. But nice to be here with a couple of famous people like you two.
Thank you, sir. Amazing coverage of the President's Cup. Do you feel like golf needs more events like this? I always feel like the President's Cup, the Ryder's Cup,
more team events
energizes fans and the casual fan more than ever.
Yeah, it does. And also remember that it was a little bit of a perfect storm in that we had, in my view, one of the great venues.
Sure.
Like ballparks in baseball, people will go on about, how great it is at Fenway and how
sure.
great it is at
Wrigley.
Wrigley.
Sure.
But ballparks aren't usually the star of any of the competition. But Royal Melbourne, in a lot of ways, is such a special place. It's very different from the other places that typically you'll play on the US tour. And then on top of that, let's not forget it's December, the week before Christmas, and we're watching primetime golf on primetime. It's kind of a treat. You can sit there and it's not necessarily a nice day outside and watch some golf. And I think that so a lot of that contributed to it. But yes, I do agree with you that at the end of the year, I think the team competitions really are sort of special, and because we see these guys, they're independent contractors,
right.
they're
exactly
they're out for themselves, 51 weeks of the year, and this 1 week of the year they come together, and I think that's pretty cool. I would definitely agree. Certainly, I think that the President's Cup needs a little bit more. I mean, frankly, it needs the internationals to win a few. Just to get it into the level of a Ryder Cup, which has obviously a lot more tradition, a lot more history.
Sure.
And on top of it, the Europeans, as they did in Paris last year, fairly regularly give the Americans a bit of a spanking. So that always adds a bit. Adds a bit of intrigue.
So in that way, if you want to think of it on the President's Cup on its own or the Ryder's Cup on its own, that's one thing. But the President's Cup and the Ryder's Cup in context of each other. So this is the one the Americans win, and this is the one that the Europeans win. Then it suddenly becomes in the pantheon of these team sports and team competitions in golf. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, oh for sure, absolutely. But that again, that said, I mean, this is all sort of inside baseball in a sense. But,
go for it.
The PGA Tour does not own any of the five biggest properties in the game of golf.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, very unique. The PGA Tour does not own any of the four majors, nor
right.
the Ryder Cup. And they are really the five biggest events in golf.
Yep.
So this was the PGA Tour's attempt, 20-odd years ago, to create a team competition that they could own. But I think that, listening to Ernie Els when we were down in Melbourne last week, it was obvious to me that, Ernie was basically saying, look, I don't know that we can ever make this a true international competition if both teams are owned by the PGA Tour.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Because obviously, in a sense, I think he thinks that the international team needs to have its own identity separate from the PGA Tour, and I would tend to agree.
So is there a way to open it up, or does it has to be that way just because the PGA owns it?
Well, I would say that it would have, I don't see the PGA Tour suddenly,
giving that up.
Suddenly saying bye-bye to the
right.
to
President's
that.
Cup.
So, but it would be, I think maybe an interesting thing if you took the professional tours of, let's say, the countries that represent the international team, Australia, South Africa, Japan, Korea, some of the South American nations, New Zealand, and you just created a little body and they did it themselves. And that I think that would be cool because it would actually set aside the two teams a bit more and make it more of a team competition. But listen, the other bottom line to it all is that no matter, what happens, at the end of the day, the American team from 1 to 12 has just always been deeper than the international team. And that has really been the reason for the results. I mean, back in the day when you had Retief Goosen,
yep.
Ernie, Vijay Singh,
mm-hmm.
Adam Scott, those four could play with any four in the U.S. team and,
right.
and give them a very good run. But down at the bottom of the order, there were a lot of weaker players and the U.S. had stronger players. And at the end of the day, 1 point's 1 point, no matter where you get it. So, you know, that's probably more of an issue is I would say, just having fewer matches. And then the points become
more valuable.
So it's not as easy to get those cheaper points.
That's right. And so you have to game plan differently. Well,
were you surprised by how excited Tiger Woods was about the win? I mean, yes, he was his first year as the captain, and it kind of
youngest captain in history.
And it capped off an amazing year for him, but he showed a lot of emotion.
Yeah, he did. And I think he obviously is evolving. You know, I mean, I think up until maybe even 10 years ago,
that's right,
Tiger was about Tiger. And, and you know, at some point, that's how it is when you get to the top of the tree.
Sure.
I think Michael Jordan was about
same
Michael
category.
Jordan. And,
yep.
And you have to have that level of selfishness because it is about you and it's about your excellence. And I think that as Tiger's gotten older, he's changed quite a bit and matured. And now I think he sees these things as part of his legacy much more than he used to. And he was indeed, very happy. And so he should have been. He put the whole thing together and he put the team together. He took, I will say, a huge, huge gamble, I thought, with Patrick Reed. Especially the week before with Patrick Reed being caught cheating and being a little bit slippery about his explanation of how he was cheating.
Yeah.
I thought that, I was very interested to see how Tiger would handle Patrick Reed.
Right.
And he responded in a way in which I probably thought he would, and that is by doubling down. So every time somebody said, Patrick Reed, terrible, how can you do this? Tiger just put him back in the lineup.
I mean,
and he kept putting him back in the lineup.
He did one thing that Patrick Reed's family wouldn't, which is stand by him.
Stuck by him.
I mean, the idea that Patrick Reed literally, again, when he sunk that putt and then mimed digging out of it's sort of giving it back to the fans, mimed digging out almost in self-awareness of what he did. What was that moment? How does Tiger double down on that moment? Does he love
it? It's really amazing. I mean, Patrick Reed is a pretty tone-deaf kind of character. And,
yep.
And definitely a prickly sort of fella.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an accident that he plays every practice round at every tournament by himself, him and his caddy. So, not exactly. I don't know how many people are have him on their Christmas card list, but
is it good for the? But is it good for the game? You got 150 other guys on a tour that are really likable guys. Is it good to have one guy stand out and to have sort of not a golf villain? I won't go that far, but to say somebody that people show up to see because they want to see him
they
not do
root
well
against him.
Yeah,
yeah, and absolutely, and well. I mean, you don't have to back down from that. I mean, he is golf's villain.
Yeah,
right now, yes.
You know, and I don't think that I really just don't think that he cares. He was
he does not care.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care because if he cared, he certainly wouldn't have been mocking the crowd.
That's right.
One thing about golf that really separates it from other sports is that there's no umpire. So, if you're flopping in the NBA or in soccer, you take a dive. You're not supposed to do it, but if you earn your team a penalty, then secretly everyone's giving you a pat on the back.
Right.
And saying, good job for conning the referee.
That's right.
But in golf, you are the referee.
That's right.
So, you're expected to do the right thing. It's not, the famous Bobby Jones quote about, you're giving me a medal because I didn't rob a bank.
Yeah.
Of course I'm going to call a penalty because that's my job. I'm a player, but I also need to obey the rules. And, it's clear to me, as someone who's played a lot of golf in my time, the only reason that you would use a wedge when you've got a semi-buried lie in a bunker, even though it was a waste area as they had at the Bahamas there at Tiger's tournament, the only reason you would do that is to try and smooth out
clear it out.
And I mean, it's obvious, it's like it's not even why are you taking a practice swing? You don't need a practice swing. You got a crappy lie, and you got a
blast
fried
it
egg
out
in there.
Just do your best to get it out of there. That's all you can
exactly
do.
Exactly. You certainly don't need to take a couple of practice swings, which, by the way, happened to smooth out the sand behind it. I mean, it's very poor. I'll tell you what, he lucked out because the following week was a team event. I think if the following week was a regular tour event,
he would have got to
heard a bit more.
Yep.
People, people talk a bit more about it. And I don't think a lot of his I don't think a lot of his peers would have been so happy with him.
I'm sure not. Thank you so much, Robert Lucetich. Really appreciate you coming on the show. Good luck to you. Follow him on Twitter, Robert Lucetich. Great stuff about golf. Great coverage of it. We'll follow you, and we really appreciate you being on the show.
You got it, guys. Merry Christmas.
You too. All right, let's take a break. Finishing up hour two, then hour three. We've got great stuff on the way. Stay with us. It's the Sklar Brothers filling in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio.